This is the Fearless Presentations Podcast, the fastest, easiest way to reduce public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on fearless presentations, Doug Stannert.
Hello and welcome to the Fearless Presentations Podcast, brought to you by the Leaders Institute and fearlesspresentations.com. I'm your host, Doug Stannert, president of the Leaders Institute, and this is the podcast that helps people just like you get rid of public speaking fear and really increase your success by increasing your confidence when you communicate. This podcast is brought to you by fearlesspresentations.com. And if you're new to the podcast, I know that a lot of you that are out there are probably in a situation where you're listening to this podcast because you want to be better at speaking in front of a group, or you want to reduce that public speaking fear. And the Fearless Presentations public speaking class is the absolute fastest, easiest way to eliminate public speaking fear. We do these classes in pretty much every major city in the United States and Canada and a number of cities in Europe. And we do, and since they're 2 days, they're very easy. Even if you're not in one of these cities that we're teaching in, that you can fly in, take the class, and get back home a lot of times at a very low cost. So let me give you an update on the classes that are coming up, because I know a lot of folks will be listening to the podcast and be kind of wondering, when are you going to be doing something in my area? So the very next classes that we have coming up, if you're listening to this sometime around the time that we recorded it, which is in early June, we have classes in Portland, Chicago. Actually, the only two classes that we have left in June are Portland and Chicago. There's still a couple of seats, I think, in either one of those classes, if you're interested. We also have classes in Denver and Minneapolis, Charlotte, San Francisco, Houston, and Kansas City. All of those are coming up in July. So quite a few classes in July if you're interested. I know that a number of these classes are going to be ones that I'm actually going to be teaching myself. So if you're interested in meeting me or coming out and seeing me, you can basically just kind of call our 800 number and you can find out which ones of those classes that have me scheduled to teach them. And I'll be happy to meet with you in person.
So, Doug, what's today's hot topic?
So in this session of the Fearless Presentations podcast, we're going to give you 7 stellar presentation enhancers that really add impact to any speech. So you've written a great speech, but now you want to make that great speech a phenomenal speech. Well, these presentation enhancers will really help you add impact to really any presentation, any speech. Now, some are going to be better in some areas and some are going to be better in other presentations. But keep in mind that the ideas that we're going to cover in this session will really help you kind of jazz up your presentations, make them more fun, make them more interesting, make them more relatable to the audiences that you're presenting to. So I'll go ahead and give you an outline of what the 7 items are, and then we're going to cover them, each one of them, in more detail. So the first one is anecdotes. Now, anecdotes are very similar to the stories that we've talked about in previous podcasts, but a lot of times these are just kind of funny stories or a story that makes a point to with the bullet that you're offering them. Now, the second impact idea, or the second presentation enhancer that we're going to talk about, is a demonstration. So it's where you actually show your audience what you're talking about as well as tell them. So give them a demonstration. The third one is a quote. And a lot of times folks will kind of overuse quotes or use them in kind of strange ways. We're going to show you some really good ways to actually use quotes so that your audience really likes what you're talking about. And then a sample is another idea. So if you have something that the audience can see, touch, feel, that can sometimes add more impact than just a description of that item. The fifth item is a name drop. So it's kind of like a quote, except you're not really quoting a person. You're basically giving a person or a company name, somebody that agrees with what you're talking about, or that backs up your point. And so you can use those in really effective ways. And I'll kind of show you how to do that as well. The sixth one is non-PowerPoint visualize, basically anything other than PowerPoint. Now, I am not anti-PowerPoint. I love PowerPoint, but a lot of times it gets kind of overused. So we're going to show you some things other than PowerPoint that you can use for visual aids to kind of break up your presentation a little bit. And then finally, the last one is showmanship. You know, you never want to underestimate the entertainment value of your presentation. So with all that being said, let's go to the very first one. The very first thing that we're going to talk about is an anecdote. And anecdotes are great because a lot of times they'll add some humor to your presentation, or there's a second type of anecdote that you can use that can help you add more credibility to your presentation as well. So in other posts, we've covered stories and examples, and we've done that in great detail. And in fact, personal stories or real life examples from your own personal experience that clarifies your presentation, those things are great to add into your presentation. The main reason why those are like a backbone of the presentations that we encourage people to design is that they're really easy to deliver. If I live something, if I was there, if I was an eyewitness to it, I can basically just play the video in my head and recite back what I saw or what I experienced. So those are really easy. When you relay success stories from your own experience, then your audience kind of realizes that you have that experience, that you're the expert on that topic that you're speaking about. Anecdotes are a little different, though. Anecdotes can be either, you know, funny incidents, true or fictitious, that help you kind of make your point, or they can also be a second person or a third person story that was experienced by somebody else. So let's kind of go into each one of those two categories. So the first one is just kind of a funny story. Now, I'm not a big fan of just telling jokes just to add jokes into a, you know, like a random joke into a speech. However, funny anecdotes that make your point are very, very useful. You'll notice that a lot of the most professional, the most sought after speakers on keynote speaking sessions, those kind of things, are going to be the speakers that get people laughing. So it's a good way to add comedy. It's a good way to add humor. But they have to make a point. You know, just to telling a joke just to tell a joke doesn't necessarily work. So the neat thing about the world that we live in today is that it's so much easier to add humor into your presentations, because if you have some content that you're presenting to your audience, all you really have to do is just go to Google, type in the phrase, something like, you know, funny story about, and then fill in the blank. Funny story about whatever, I don't care what presentation that you're talking about, what kind of information you're presenting to the idea. You could say cancer, for God's sakes. I mean, that's not a funny topic, but you can type in funny story about cancer, and I'm pretty sure you're probably going to get some humorous kind of anecdote somewhere on Google. Somebody will have had some type of experience that cracked everybody else up. So just keep that in mind. So once you find that funny anecdote, then you just have to make sure to tie it in with the point that you're making. That sometimes takes a little bit of kind of massaging, but as long as you can tie that funny story into the bullet point or the topic or the point that you're making, it makes it really easy. So I give you an example of how I did this recently. So I typed in funny public speaking failures. Right, so that was the thing that I typed into Google, and I found a really humorous kind of story from the Jannard Method website, and basically what the speaker who kind of wrote this down basically said, it said, while traveling to Sister Cities Chamber of Commerce Business Exchange Group to Nagoka, Japan, he said, it was asked to speak after breakfast about marketing in the U.S. So seeking the opportunity to show off my linguistic skills, I asked my interpreter how to pronounce the words on the distant signs for ladies and gentlemen, right? So apparently the person saw signs on the wall, said ladies and gentlemen, and wanting to add that in to the presentation, thought it might be a really cool thing to do. So after practicing to myself, I began my speech with, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, in Japanese. This got quite a reaction from the audience, and I delivered a killer 20 minutes of marketing wisdom and sat down to generous applause. I was quite pleased with myself. Only later did I learn that how strange my greeting was. One of the hosts gently inquired why I had started my talk with good morning, toilets and urinals. So anyway, so um, Yeah, I mean, you can add some kind of humorous, kind of funny stuff in there. And again, that was the first random thing that kind of popped up. It's a funny story. You know, if I happen to be speaking on times when folks got up in front of a group and they didn't do as well as what they wanted to, you know, then we can use kind of stories like that in a speech, as long as I'm drawing my after I tell the speech, I kind of draw it back to the point that I'm making in my presentation. Now, so those kind of things are fun. They're a good way to add humor into your presentation, good way to add humor into your speech. There's a second type of anecdote, though, that we use a lot more, especially when I'm doing training in public speaking. When I'm coaching people, I typically will encourage them to use this type of anecdote more often than just the funny stories. It's the second or third person story. Now, although our own personal stories help us really build our credibility as an expert on the topic, another person's story can be practical, in fact, even more practical in a lot of the situations that we're speaking in. For instance, let's say you're a sales representative and you're trying to sell a service or a product to a client or a potential client. Well, the problem with that is that you are biased, right? So if I'm a sales guy and I'm talking about my own personal experience using this product, they're going, well, yeah, you're the sales guy, right? However, if I can relay a story of one of my other clients that were in a similar situation to what this person is and kind of show how that person had a success with my product or service, now all of a sudden that adds a little bit more credibility. It's not me saying it. It's now it's my client. It's something that can be verified, right? They can actually, if I tell the story and they want more details, they can actually call that client up and get more details, right? So the second person story, it will often add more credibility to your presentation because it's coming from a secondary source or a third person source. I'll give you a good example of this. I just this last week I had a scientist in my class who studied melanoma. So she was a cancer researcher. And although her stories of actually doing the research added a lot of clarity to the presentations that she gave us in the class, she got more impact by telling stories of patients who had survived cancer based on the studies that she had done. So when she told a couple of those kind of stories, now all of a sudden, that adds even more credibility to what she's telling us, right? So when you read, by the way, just a little cautionary note, when you retell a story from your own personal experience, it takes very little practice. I mean, you can just play the video in your head and just kind of recite back what's going on. However, when you relay a story that you receive from another person, another source, you might want to practice that delivery a few times because if you leave out even just a few of those details, it will become confusing for the audience. So be very, very careful. Hey, by the way, let me kind of back up a little bit because even though we're going to cover all seven of these things that will help you get more impact, let me kind of back up because one of the things that you want to keep in mind is that you want to proceed with caution when you add these things into your presentation. Before you just start adding a bunch of impact ideas into your speech, you want to proceed with caution because the presentations enhancers will make a good presentation a great presentation. However, if you have a poorly designed presentation and you add in the enhancers, it just makes it worse, right? So a good analogy or a good example of this in real life was, I remember back when I was a kid, I remember watching a Bill Cosby special. He was on, I think it was on HBO when I was a kid, Bill Cosby himself. And I remember, I mean, it was on for like years. And so everybody kind of saw this. This was, you know, pre, you know, the conviction and everything. So this is back when everybody still liked Bill Cosby. But one of the funniest things that he said in that was he was talking about cocaine. He said he had a friend of his that was on cocaine. He went up to his friend and said, "Why do you like that? Why do you take cocaine?" And his friend said, "Because it intensifies your personality." And so Bill Cosby kind of pauses and he says, "Yeah, but what if you're an a-hole?" Right? So, and that's kind of the way that, you know, adding things into a presentation can be. If you have a really good presentation and you add some of these impact ideas in, it will make it soar. It'll make it just stellar. If you have a really crappy presentation and you start adding more stuff in, it tends to kind of make it worse. So just kind of keep that in mind. So before you start adding a bunch of these anecdotes in or any of the other things that we're going to cover, you know, just make sure that you have a really well-designed presentation first and then add these things into a well-designed presentation. It'll make it a whole lot better. So number two, the second one is a demonstration. Sometimes it's much easier to kind of show someone a process than to tell them. I remember when I was in the sixth grade, my teacher had us teach each other a step-by-step process. Sounds real easy. The trick was, though, that the person who was receiving the instructions had to do exactly what he or she was being told to do. And they couldn't do anything more than exactly what he or she was being told to do. So our assignment, I was on a little team, and my little team had, our assignment was to teach the class how to make a peanut butter sandwich. We didn't have to put jelly on it. It was basically just teach them how to put peanut butter on a slice of bread. Sounds pretty easy, but initially we said things like, take the bread out of the plastic bag. And as soon as we did that, the person who was hearing us was doing exactly what we said to do. So without, you know, taking the twist tie off the bag or anything, just ripping a hole in the bag and with a lot of force, and all of a sudden bread starts flying all over the room and everything. So we're like, okay, well, we have to be a little bit more specific. So at that point, we started to kind of be a little bit more cautious with the instructions that we were giving. So we put, like, so the next thing we said was, you know, put a little peanut butter on the knife. And of course the guy who was kind of following directions just put he hadn't even picked up the knife yet. So the knife was still sitting on the table. So he basically took the entire canister of peanut butter and stuck it on top of the knife, you know? So we kind of, at that point we were thinking, okay, there must be some kind of trick to this, you know? And I know what the teacher was trying to do was trying to get us to add more clarity in the instructions that we were giving so that there was going to be less chance of the people in the audience to get confused. But, you know, what we decided to get a little creative. So what we did was, you know, after just a number of these miscues, we kind of discussed a little strategy with myself and the other, you know, tiny speakers there. And we came up with the idea to go to the table ourselves and then have one of us, you know, one of the speakers just say, just do what I do. and then one of us made the sandwich and then explained to the other people what we were doing in each step. So, by the way, we got an A on the project, and really after we went, everybody else after us got an A on the project as well. So I guess we were so creative that the teacher kind of felt sorry for us, I guess, more than anything else, but it kind of worked. We accomplished the task that she was looking at, and that's really what she wanted us to do, was really think outside the box so that we could communicate more effectively. So I never forgot that lesson, though, and it's a whole lot easier to show somebody how to do something rather than to just tell them, especially if it's a step-by-step process or if it's a complicated process. This type of visual aid is critical when you're teaching someone, especially if you're teaching them something technical or teaching them how to use a new software package or something like that. You can tell them all you want, but if you show them step-by-step how to do it, it's going to be a whole lot more effective and easier, by the way, to explain. So the third impact idea that we're going to cover is a quote. Now, a good quote will allow you to borrow the credibility of an expert temporarily. So you're going to temporarily borrow the credibility of someone else who is an expert in the field. Now, Tom Peters, he's a famous motivational speaker who uses a ton of quotes in his speeches. And Peters once actually said, he said, my conclusions are much more credible when I back them up with great sources. And by the way, I agree. You know, if you can back up your content with great sources, it makes it a whole lot easier to design your presentations and a whole lot easier to kind of deliver those presentations. Now, you're basically what you're doing is you're giving your audience a second opinion. So instead of them just relying on you as the expert, now we're getting a second opinion, or if we do a couple of quotes, a third opinion even. So, and it's real easy. Just like with the funny story above that we talked about, you can actually just go to Google and put quotes about blank, you know, whatever it is that you're speaking on, quotes about blank, and you'll get a ton of websites that come up that will give you quotes related to that topic. It's very strange how many different websites that are out there, web pages that are out there that have quotes about just random topics. So if you don't find exactly what you're looking for, you might find something close enough anyway. So make sure that the quotes that you're adding, though, are short and that they're easy to remember, though. Because a lot of speakers will put very long quotes on a PowerPoint slide and then call that as a supporting point. I mean, that's, to me, that's like fingernails on the chalkboard when somebody puts a big, huge quote up on the PowerPoint slideshow and they look at the audience and say, what does that quote mean to you? You know, to me, that's just poor presentation skills. Because there's so many other things that you could be doing with that quote that can really help you make your point. By the way, if you do something like that, whether you're reading the quote to the audience or you're allowing the audience to read the quote, you're likely to fall flat in front of a group anyway, because nobody wants to read that stupid long quote that you just put up there. And if you read it to them, you're going to sound kind of strange. So you'll get much better results by just inserting a couple of easy to remember quotes that you can relay to your audience verbally. Craig Hayden wrote a post that's called How to Use Quotes in Your Presentations, and he said it really well. He said, short quotes pack more punch, which is phenomenal. I mean, just really good, concise way to kind of prove that that's there. So anyway, the fourth impact idea that you can use, or the fourth way to really enhance your presentation, is to give your audience a sample. You know, so sometimes an item that a person can kind of see, touch, feel is a better visual aid than a photograph or a slide. And one of the best examples of this is when it was a class member that I had about a decade ago. And I was teaching a presentation class in Las Vegas, and one of the participants that was in the program worked for the Southland Corporation. Now, this is the company that owns like the 7-Eleven convenience stores, 7-Eleven gas stations, that kind of thing. And at the time, 7-Eleven was having a big marketing crisis, but they were having a big marketing challenge anyway. Because 7-Eleven, from the time that I was a kid, and probably even younger than, oh, more longer than that anyway, they have spent a tremendous amount of time, money, effort to build up some really, really well-known brands. You know, for instance, they have a soft drink called the Big Gulp, 32 ounces, a Big Gulp. And they have the Super Big Gulp too, right? And then they have the big honker of a hot dog is called their Big Bite, you know, the Big Bite. And then they have Slurpees and that kind of stuff too. So these are fantastic trade names that they've, the trademarks and trade names that they've built up over the last, you know, 3 or 4 decades. Problem is that the buyer has shifted dramatically, though, to much more healthy options. And so some of these things are not marketing as well as what they have in the past anyway. So what this marketing person that worked for 7-Eleven was kind of working on, one of her big projects was getting more healthy options into the 7-Eleven stores. And one of the things that they were doing at the time was they were offering these really fresh handmade deli sandwiches, like you'd get in a real deli. You know, I'm not talking about the Subway type things where everything's kind of pre-cut and everything. I'm talking more like a deli. It's like you'd see in like streets of New York kind of thing. So very well designed, well made kind of sandwiches. They were just beautiful. And so the woman who was in the class gave us a presentation in the first part of the second day. We were helping her kind of design her marketing presentation, and she did a phenomenal job. It was great. And she was telling us about these sandwiches, and we were kind of intrigued, but I don't think any of us were going to go out for lunch and go to 7-Eleven, right? We weren't quite to that point yet. So what she did, though, at lunch of that day was she went out and she got two samples. She got a sample from her 7-Eleven store, one of the stores that were close to the location where we were teaching. And then she also went to a convenience store that was next door to the 7-Eleven and got a sandwich in their refrigerated section. So to describe the sandwich that she brought from the competitor, she went and got one of those. I don't know if you've ever seen these before, but they're it's just a regular kind of sandwich like you'd make at home with white bread, you know, and they're cut down the center of the sandwich diagonally, so it creates two triangles, and those two triangles are shoved into this little triangle box, and it's got writing all over the cover, so you can't even see the sandwich. You don't want to see the sandwich because Lord knows when that sandwich was made, and it's just been refrigerated for, you know, days or weeks or whatever. So not the most appetizing type thing. And then she had her sandwich, which was, you know, really fresh and beautiful. And it had, you know, like fresh bread that was, you know, kind of made in the store, I guess. And then in addition to that, it had this really, really bright green lettuce leaf that was, you know, kind of symmetrical all the way around it. I mean, it looked like something that you would use in a marketing photograph. You know, a lot of times when you're at a fast food place or something like that, and you see they have the food on the marketing posters, and then you actually order that thing, and it doesn't look anything like what's on the marketing poster. Well, this actually did. This was, you know, this sandwich looked really good. So when she gave her presentation, during the day of the presentation class, we were adding stuff into her presentation to really jazz it up. So adding some of these impact ideas and some of the other things that we cover in the class. And when she finished, when she gave her final presentation at the end of the day, she used those two samples as one of her visual aids. She kind of showed, she said, basically, this is what you get at our 7-Eleven store, and this is what you get at one of our competitors. So it was a really cool way to dramatize what she was talking about. So the sample kind of really worked for her. So number five, the fifth way that you can add or enhance your presentation, add something to your presentation, is do what we call a name drop. Now, a name drop is very similar to a quote, but we're not actually quoting the source. So a name drop would be, it could be for the name of a famous person. Let's say you're selling products and a famous person actually uses your product, right? So, you know, like for instance, Air Jordans, you know, obviously Michael Jordan is sponsoring that product. So those shoes are something that are linked with him, his personality. So, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a famous person though. It could be a company, you know, for instance, since my company, the Leaders Institute, we've taught presentation classes for like 400 of the Fortune 500, the companies on the Fortune 500 list, you know. So we often, you know, can name drop really big customers in the same industry of a company who is requesting information from us. You know, for instance, if let's say that somebody is requesting information about one of our public speaking courses, and we're going to give them a sales presentation, and that person who's buying from us, or the potential buyer anyway, happens to work for a university. Well, you know, a lot of times in that kind of situation, we'll just list a number of other universities that we've taught presentation classes for. So like, for instance, we've taught classes for Texas A&M, for Boston University, for Harvard, you know, we've even taught, you know, presentation classes for Harvard. So those clients help add a lot of credibility to our speakers when we mention those big companies or those big organizations that we work for. If we were going to do the same thing, let's say we get a request for information from a real high-tech company. So it's real easy for us to kind of talk about other high-tech companies that we've worked for, because we've done classes for Google, we've done classes for Facebook, for PayPal, for Microsoft, you know. So a lot of the big companies, the big tech companies, have hired us to do classes for them. So by using those companies that we've worked in the past, it's kind of, we're name dropping in order to kind of show that if the person who's requesting information from us hires us, they're not really taking as big a risk, because those other big companies have already taken that risk in the past and they've succeeded as a result of taking that risk. So sometimes that can work really, really well. So when I'm teaching classes about how important it is to narrow down your content to 3 to 5 main points, you know, a lot of times we call this like the 3-point talk or the 4-point talk or the 5-point talk. It's a really, really effective way, an easy way to design a presentation. But we're not the only company presentation training company that uses that type of skill development. So a lot of times I'll just name other professional speakers who also agree with me. So for instance, when we're teaching the 3-point talk, we can reference organizations like Slide Genius, you know. So that's a company or an organization that helps people make PowerPoint slides, and they believe that the 3-point talk is a really good way to do it. Presentations Magazine has written articles about the 3-point talk. Big training companies like the Dale Carnegie Organization and the American Management Association, they all believe in some sort of rule of three in a presentation. So basically, by me name dropping those other organizations, it makes it a whole lot easier for somebody who's listening to that content to say, okay, well, this is probably on the up and up if all those different organizations actually believe the same thing that this guy is talking about, right? So I'm basically borrowing their credibility. Notice that in each of the examples, though, that I just used, I'm not quoting any of the sources. All I'm saying is that each of the sources agrees with the statement that I'm making. Now, of course, if any of the listeners, who are the people who are in the audience, if they want to verify my claim, it's going to be real easy for them to do a Google search. And by the way, and that, I believe, is one of the things that makes the name drop so powerful, is because it's basically what it does is it allows the inner Sherlock Holmes of the people in the audience members to really come out and do their own investigation. Because when they do that Google search and they see that the things that I, as the speaker, am saying that I said were right on the money, it verifies. They get it. They're basically verifying what I'm saying through multiple different sources. So it's a really good way to kind of build up your credibility and get your audience to really agree with you and really persuade them. So name dropping can be very helpful. The sixth one that we're going to cover here is what I call the non-PowerPoint visual aid. So basically anything other than PowerPoint that helps you get your point across. Now, I'm not saying. Don't use PowerPoint. PowerPoint is a phenomenal tool, and I use it all the time. In fact, I use PowerPoint pretty much almost every day of my life, if not every day, pretty close to it anyway. Very effective use of visual aid. So what I'm saying, though, is that you just don't want to use PowerPoint as your only visual aid. You know, for instance, instead of just inserting a photo into a slide, and if you do that, by the way, when it shows up on the screen, it'll show up for a few seconds, and as soon as you hit the arrow button, it's going to disappear, right? So it has a short lifespan. So instead of doing that, you might put that same photo on a board or on a poster and put that in front of the group so they can see it for a longer period of time. It's got a greater longevity if you do it that way. The company that I worked with a few years ago was competing to win a contract. It was for a 5-year project. This really, really long project, and they were competing with a number of other companies. One of the companies that we were actually competing against, this actually wasn't one that we actually won, but one of the companies that we were competing against had only one visual aid. They didn't do any PowerPoint. They didn't do anything else. All they did was they created a big, huge Gantt chart, I think is what they call it. I'm not a project manager, but I'm pretty sure that's what they call it. It's basically a timeline of the entire project. And they made this stinking thing like 20 feet long, and they wheeled it in. It had like three parts, and they wheeled it in and kind of connected it together. And basically all they did for the 45 minutes that they were giving their presentation was just go through that Gantt chart, that timeline, step by step. So they had it broken down into time, you know, periods or eras, and they would cover they had one of the speakers that would cover the initial part where it was, and kind of explain what was going to go on in the first 2 or 3 months. And then somebody would cover the next 6 months, and then somebody would cover the next 6 months. And basically they just did it in kind of a story format. So they were engaging the brains of the people who are listening to the presentation to get them to really paint the picture of what this was going to look like. Whereas the rest of the folks who were presenting actually did their presentations a little different. They were kind of talking about how they should get the job. We should get this job because we're good at blank, blank, and blank, right? Whereas the company that ended up winning were the ones that helped them create that image in their minds of what success was actually going to look like on this project. So they got creative, and as a result of getting creative, they had some really good success there. Let me give you another example. This is one that just kind of hit me. About a decade ago, I was coaching a team that was trying to build a real high-tech science center on the campus of the University of Texas. And the client that I was working with had done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of buildings on university campuses before. So, I mean, they were definitely well qualified. But at the time, this project was for a really high-tech, and I think it was like a microbiology center. It was a science center anyway. But the thing about this science center was that it had very specific types of prerequisites or qualifications, things that had to be done in an exact specific way. So, like, for instance, since they were going to be doing a lot of experiments, the humidity had to be a constant rate. The the temperature had to be a constant rate, that kind of thing. So there were things that were very specific to this type of project. And unfortunately, the client that I was working for, although they were very skilled and experienced in working with universities, they'd only done one project like this before. And the one project that they had done was for a really futuristic type building. So it was, and they had a picture of it. It was beautiful, by the way. It was glass and aluminum and mirrors, and it looked like something out of Epcot. You know, it was a pretty good looking building. But the moment that they showed that on the screen, we were in the Hilton that overlooked the University of Texas campus in downtown Austin, when we were preparing doing the final run through for the presentation. And I'm looking down the campus, I'm looking at the screen, I'm looking down at the campus, looking at the screen, looking down at the campus, looking at the screen. I'm kind of noticing that, holy cow, that Epcot thing is not going to fit on the campus that's already there now. If you've never been to the University of Texas, it's, I guess the best way to describe it is it's kind of gothic. You know, it's like concrete pillars and gargoyles and stuff like that. You know, it's a beautiful campus, but when you look at it, you wouldn't say, man, that's really futuristic. So if they plopped down this really futuristic looking building in the middle of that campus, it was going to stick out like a sore thumb, right? So, you know, once I kind of pointed that out to the folks that were designing the presentation, we had to kind of rethink exactly what they were going to be doing in this presentation. So, by the way, it didn't take a whole lot of convincing for the folks. You know, once I kind of made that what seemed to be kind of obvious point, they were like, okay, well, let's kind of do something a little different. So what they did was they sent one of the architects, one of the guys that was one of the leads in the project, they sent him down with a sketchbook. He had like a poster book, like poster board, I would say it was, but they were each one of the sketchbook pages were kind of, they were poster board like pages, but they were about half the size of a poster board, you know, so it was pretty good size posters anyway. And he went down with a pencil and he just started sketching things that he saw. He just walked around campus for, it must have been maybe an hour or so, and just sketched things that he liked. It was just a pencil sketch, right? Because he just wanted to be able to bring those sketches back up to the group and say, hey, if we're going to make something that fits into this campus, these are some things that we might want to add. And when he brought the sketches back up, they were so good. I mean, they were works of art. They were really, really well done. Something that you would see a lot of times in like a museum or something. And so we ended up adding those into the presentation. So at a certain point in the final presentation, when they got it all honed down, they hit the W button on the PowerPoint slideshow. When you do that, by the way, it just creates a white screen. And so with that white screen, the architect then kind of came up with a tripod with his sketches on them. And he basically just described the sketches one at a time. So they were showing that white background on the sketches. So it looked like it was a spotlight almost. It was a really cool way to add some creativity into the presentation. So, and basically all the architect did was he just went through sketch after sketch after sketch, showed the folks who were making the decision the things that he liked about what was already on the campus. And by as a result of doing that, I think he really built some rapport with the folks who were there. They said, these guys know what we want. And so we were doing something that nobody else in that presentation were doing. We were using other visual aids that really captured the attention of the audience so that they felt they had more rapport with us. So as a result, they ended up getting that job very, very quickly. So those visual aids that you use can be very effective, but you want to be careful to not just tie yourself to PowerPoint. PowerPoint can do a lot of good things, and I would encourage you to experiment with PowerPoint and do some really cool visual aids there as well. But if you can get away from the PowerPoint slideshow, a lot of times you can make yourself seem very different from the other folks that are presenting in a real positive way anyway. So the seventh one, the last one that we're going to cover today is showmanship. And I saved the best for last because one of the things I kind of mentioned earlier in the podcast was that you never, ever want to underestimate the value of entertainment in a presentation. So let me kind of repeat that one more time, just because it is so important. Never, ever, ever, ever underestimate the entertainment value in a presentation. Most speakers think that if they just give their audience the knowledge, the information that they're required to, then they've done their job. If they can do, especially if they can do that without sounding like an idiot. If I can get my presentation across, and I don't throw up on my shoes, and I don't sound like an idiot, then I've done my job. But when you do that, you're discounting one of the major parts of a presentation. It's the entertainment value. Whenever I think about this, I kind of think of the old the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where the teacher, you know, was I think they bring him in like three or four times in the movie, and it's always funny. It's always hilarious because the actor who's playing Ferris Bueller's teacher is really making the teaching that he's doing sounds so boring, sounds so dry, and they look around, and every time that he's speaking, the cameras will move to the kids who are in the audience, and they're, you know, kind of glassy eyed and everything. So that's the last thing in the world that you want when you're presenting. You don't want a bunch of glassy eyed people sitting in your audience. You want people who are into your presentation. So putting some flair or some showmanship into your speech can really, really help. Now, obviously, if you add any of the other seven items that we've covered, those six things that I've covered in the last hour or so, you're going to have a much more interesting delivery. And the key is to think to yourself, after you've written the presentation, after you've designed the presentation and organized it well, then you want to kind of go back and say, your final step is to say, how can I make this content more interesting? Whatever it is that I'm covering, how do I make this more interesting? And I'll give you an example. Sometimes if you just get creative, you can come up with some really good stuff. So I had a class member who was a line supervisor for a pharmaceutical company in Providence, Rhode Island. It went to my Boston class years and years ago. But the pharmaceutical company that I worked for was Amgen, and Amgen makes cancer drugs. So a really cool job, really, really interesting kind of job. Anyway, but one of this guy's main jobs was quality control of the drug line. So as a cancer drug is coming off and being created or put into the pill form or whatever it was that he was doing, his job was to make sure that had the highest quality dosage and everything, you know, so to make sure that the people who are getting this drug are getting something safe and effective and getting the best that they can get, right? So what he did during his presentation was really cool. I mean, this has been probably 12 years ago that this guy went through my class, and I still remember this. I still get chills, by the way, when I kind of think about it, just because it was such a cool piece of showmanship. So what he did was he went to the back of the room before he even started his presentation. He went to the back of the room. We had a coffee bar set up where you can get coffee and tea and stuff like that. And he took a sugar packet and he palmed it in his hand. He ripped the top off the sugar packet and kind of palmed his hand. And he gave his entire, whatever it was, 10 or 12 minute speech or so that he was giving to us with that sugar packet palmed in his hand. And then the last thing he said before he sat down is he looked at the audience. He said, "Hey, have any of you guys ever seen $1 million, $1 million? And of course, we all shook our heads, no, you know, and all he did was, without saying another word, he kind of looked at the audience. Well, actually, he did say something. He said, "Well, in my industry, $1 million looks like this." And he kind of flicked his wrist out to where a few of those sugar granules kind of fell on the table in front of him. And then he pointed to those, you know, 15, 20 or so little granules of sugar that popped, that fell on the table in front of him. He said, "If that much contaminant gets into one of our drug lines, we lose $1 million worth of product." Like that. And he kind of snapped his fingers when he did it. It was so cool. It was a really dramatic way to make his point. And we all just kind of got chills down our spine when he did it. It was just one of those things that kind of really stood out. So you can, if you get creative and you use some showmanship along the way, you can add some really fun and interest to your presentation and make it more interesting for the audience, make it where the audience will kind of pay attention to you more. So keep that in mind. Now, regardless of which of these ideas that you use, you got to do something different. If you're just doing what everybody else does in their PowerPoint presentations or in their presentations, you're probably not going to get the best results. So the ideas that I've covered in this list of seven, they're not exhaustive by any means. In fact, some of these, you know, ideas may spark some creativity in somewhere totally different when you kind of hear them. And that's great. That's what you want. So the most important thing to remember, though, is that if you don't want you just don't want to do what everybody else is doing. Make your speeches a little bit different. Make them a little more interesting. And if you do that, your audience will absolutely love you. So hopefully you've enjoyed this podcast. And by the way, if you haven't yet subscribed to our podcast, make sure to do that on iTunes. Leave us a comment, by the way. If you like what we're doing here, then make sure and leave us a positive comment or negative comment for that matter. But basically, just kind of let us know if you like what we're doing here. Keep giving those presentations, if you keep doing the things that we're talking about here on the podcast, you're just going to be a phenomenal presenter. You're going to grow more and more and more each week. So we'll see you next week on the Fearless Presentations Podcast.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.